Trish and Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
All right, and we will start in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Rob McGregor and
Trish McGregor.
And our producer and tech magician, John Posey. You can go to themysticalunderground.com where we make regular blog posts and where you can find out about our books. Among them are The Seven Secrets of Synchronicity, Sensing the Future, The Secrets of Spirit Communication, and Aliens in the Backyard. Our latest book is called Mind-Blowing Synchronicities, The Latest Science, Stories, and Research. Trish's latest novel just coming out is called Not Quite Human. And Rob's most recent novel is called Tulpas, A Story of Mysterious Beings Created Through Deep Meditation. If you are watching us on YouTube, we would appreciate if you would take a second to click the like, subscribe, and notification buttons so you never miss an episode. If you prefer to listen to the show, it's available wherever you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe there.
Our guest today is Colleen Quinn, a transpersonal psychologist with a child specialty who is also certified in breathwork. Colleen has taught psychology at Ohio State University, Virginia Commonwealth University, Columbia State Community College, and was the dean at Hondros College. She has published research in top-tier scientific journals, including Emotion, Adolescent Psychology, and Residential Treatment for Children and Youth. She's the author of Essence Merging, which just came out this month. Welcome, Colleen. It's great to have you. And my first question is about your necklace. What is it?
Well, it's actually the skull of a catfish. And I love this because everything in the natural material world points to some greater physical phenomenon. And this is a perfect example of that. Culturally, obviously, it identifies very closely with the experience of in our human history of the crucifixion of the prophet Jesus, whether you believe he was the prophet or the son of God. That is part of our human history, and it's embedded in the skull of a catfish.
It's really unusual. Where'd you get it?
My dear sweet sister who lives in San Francisco, who finds these antique shops, sends the most incredible jewelry, and I love her for it.
That's great. So that really wasn't part of our question about your book, but that's okay. I think you explained the theme.
Yeah, but let's start with that title, Essence Merging. What does that phrase mean to you, and why is it the perfect title for this book?
You know, Rob, I did a lot of breathwork sessions gazing into the eyes of my breathwork partner. That's very tantric, but the first level of tantra is gaze. And when you gaze into the eyes of another person, you're really seeing soul to soul. It is a deeper communication. And in that, you lose the sense of a separate self. There is no me. There is no you. There's just this experience between us, this love that we co-create. And that is our essences merging. And it points to the greater reality that we're all looking for. We all have a sense of emptiness in our hearts, but we remember it's built into our spiritual DNA. Back to the beginning of time before the Big Bang, when we were all together, unique manifestations of the One. We were in wholeness. And I think when we are in that experience of wholeness, that harmony, we feel bliss, but we call it love. But the real phenomenon is the wholeness. So when you can experience that, you're releasing bliss to every cell in your body, and we can talk about all of the physiological benefits of that, but it's available in any moment. So whether you're emptying the dishwasher, walking in the woods, having a conversation with a cashier, any human, you can drop in to that place of soul-to-soul connection. It'll elevate the experience, and it'll make the mundane sacred.
Huh. So that's the love story you're talking about.
It for sure is. Love would have it that I met this person on the other side of the earth. He lived very close to me, and we were charged to share a breath together. We took that charge very seriously. Our guru, who really was the greatest embodiment of love that I've ever met and known, said, "You're so close to the White House. If you do this, you'll elevate the energy of the whole collective." That's true for any breath work. It's always going to elevate that energy, that frequency level. And so we breathe together every other week. But surrendering to breath, following the leadings of breath, we would do these things that we were like, what's really happening? And I would go back to the research and find support in Tantra. These were things that were done regularly to raise and amplify our frequency, and we forgot about them. Now, I'm in a vibrant marriage of 46 years. He was a bachelor then, but then got engaged. This was honorable. There was nothing inappropriate or sexual about it. But when you feel those feelings of bliss and unity, and you don't act on them, in the Hindu, they call it kundalini. I don't know if you've heard that, Trish. And physiologically, what's happening is there's crystals in our cerebral spinal fluid. They get compressed, and they get compressed up the spine into the ventricles next to our pineal gland, and they put a massaging pressure on our pineal gland. What lays dormant in our pineal gland is the chemical DMT. Now, do you and Rob know what that chemical is?
Yes.
Do you think all of your listeners know?
Explain it, just in case.
Yeah, it is the active ingredient that makes certain mushrooms psychedelic, certain plant medicines. It's not just mushrooms. And society tells us that that chemical is outside of us. It is. Those plants are enlightened beings. They'll lay down their life for you to have an enlightened experience. But they lay dormant in our pineal glands. And so when that DMT is released, it gets released out of the pineal gland into all of the 70 trillion cells in our body, sending a message of well-being, but also increasing the interstitial fluid in our cells. When your cells hold more fluid, you can amplify at a greater level. And it's just the most simplistic example of how the things we do in this material realm affect the energy realm. And when we're amplifying at that higher level, it creates more well-being in our bodies, our hearts, our minds, our cells. So it's a bi-directional relationship. These two realms coexist, and they inform each other. But the more real realm is the energy realm. This is a beautiful, very beautiful delusion.
Yeah, I was thinking that you might have been referring to melatonin, which doesn't the pineal gland also produce melatonin?
It for sure does. In serotonin, the serotonin converts to the melatonin at night. Yeah. But no, it's the DMT that sends those feeling. It only gets released when we're feeling bliss. We only feel the bliss when we're in the wholeness. Mm-hmm. And It sends that message of well-being to the cells. It upgrades the interstitial fluid.
Okay. So the last couple of days, I've been reading your book, read most of it, and what I found striking was that when I look at your academic background and all the places you've taught and been involved with, there's not a stitch of that in the book about your that part of your life, the academic side. I mean, this is all experience. And so what I'm asking, did what you wrote about there, is that all before you moved on to higher education and the pursuit of becoming a psychologist?
Quite the opposite. It's after. So I was a psychologist for years and years. And, you know, your question reminds me of an old ancient Jewish proverb. What is truer than truth? Do you know the answer?
No, what is
truth?
It's experience.
Experience, it's, right, yeah.
The experience becomes unrefutable for us. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. You viscerally feel it in your body, and it's noetic. It becomes truth for you. So while I had studied psychology all of those years, helped a lot of people. Mm-hmm. However, psychology does have some treatments that have the capacity to truly heal. For the most part, with managed care and the people themselves, they want a quick fix. They want tools. They want a couple band-aids. So sadly, psychology rarely gets the opportunity to actually heal anyone. And I talk about it early in my book. I start at the end of my...
Yes, I remember that now. Right at the end of... You're working with children who had really bad experiences in their lives.
And at that time, even though I was the head of research and we were using mindfulness to study its effects on virtually every disorder, and it worked really well. Kids learned how to drop into the present moment. And they would, whether it was internalizing or externalizing, they learned to see the bigger picture of their actions. It worked really well. And I felt like a fraud because at the time, I had a lot of unresolved trauma that I had studied about, but I hadn't really dealt with. And I was a walking head. I could not get out of the diatribe in my head for more than a few minutes.
Huh. But yeah. Now, was your emphasis on Jung or Freud or Adler? Or
it was on CBT, and the treatment we were doing was actually dialectical behavioral therapy, which is based in the Eastern religions and heavily based in mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I knew the treatments, but it eluded me, like, well, how are these people getting out of their heads? When you are steeped in unresolved trauma, it doesn't matter how much you learn about it. You have to develop a relationship with the energy. You have to eventually feel comfortable enough to go in and feel those things that you did not want to feel, that you were overwhelmed and didn't want to feel at the time. And what I love about breath work is when you use breath work as the means to go in, a couple things are beneficial. One is it's only going to take you into those descent trips at your ego's pace of readiness. So psychedelics is going to drop you right into your soul, whether you're ready or not. And that can seem traumatic if you're not ready, if you don't know how to surrender and you're not ready. It's a beautiful gift because it's your own soul. Breath work will give you these lovely ascent trips and the oneness and woo you with love. But as your ego starts to feel safe and relaxed, it will take you to those descent places. But you've now learned how to detach from your human form. And at that point, you're hovering over your body, looking at those experiences through the eyes of love, yet fully feeling them. And it universally, what I say is it flips the coin we wrapped around the story. So most trauma stories we wrap around that we were victims, that we were alone, that we couldn't handle it. For myself and the clients that I've worked with, the coin always gets flipped. We realize we were never alone and that it was part of love's plan and it made us who we are today and that we're much stronger because we had that experience and it showed us just how strong we are. So, and these are noetic knowings. They're not just words. They become, like I said, unrefutable.
As I read your story, I sense a strong archetype of the wounded child with your background, with your own upbringing, with your mother. And this is what you were confronting all along with your experiences, as well as the results of that car accident, especially. That was pretty traumatic experience, and you relived it with a psychedelic experience with peyote and sassafras, which I never heard of.
Yeah. Seems like an odd combination. What does sassafras do?
It is the chemical compound of MDMA.
And okay. I didn't know.
MDMA is a heart opener, which is very meditative, and it's really just from a purely psychological standpoint, of all the plant medicines, MDMA has the largest effect sizes for trauma. So it was the perfect psychedelic for me to use. And Rob, it's interesting that you brought up the archetype of the wounded child. Very true. So I'd like to say a few things about that. One, for the listeners who aren't familiar with my story, I had a lot of womb trauma. My mother was beaten when she was pregnant with me, and she was hospitalized twice out of fear for my safety. So that I could tell that story for years, and I can even tell it now like it was last night's sitcom. But when you go back in breath and you allow yourself, breath took me all the way back to the womb. And that was an experience I had in my retreat where I learned about breath work. And when you allow yourself to fully feel it, which I did, it's a rearranging of the energy. So when you're in these breath experiences, it sometimes feels like you're underwater because you're in another realm. And so while I'm deep in this experience of the womb and being born, I'm hearing this howling like an animal with its hand caught in a trap.
Oh.
I come up out of the experience enough to notice the howling and think, wow, somebody's really having a hard time with this. Because there was, I don't know, 30 of us doing it, all in close enough proximity. And then I realized it was me.
Oh, geez.
I didn't even know it because you're so deep in the experience. But the people around me knew that I was protected by love, knew that I wasn't overwhelmed, and they allowed me to fully feel it. A lot came out of that. Rob does mention most healing's not one and done. I revisited that birth wound many times. And after I did that sassafras, I went to somatic experiencing therapy for a year.
Huh.
It's my big qualm with psychedelics. Like I said, they're enlightened plants. They will lay down your life, their life, so you have an enlightened experience. But often people, they're not addictive at all, but people will chase the trips because they're quite alluring and they don't integrate. Hmm. When you're under the influence of that medicine, you're like, oh my God, I am God. You are God. Why aren't we all walking around like this? this is so plainly obvious. But then you, when the medicine wears off, you need to live into that. And that's quite a radical transformation. So living into what I learned about my wound trauma took quite an integration. And in order to fully integrate that experience, you have to change your relationship with it. So you have to allow your body to fully activate every muscle, every fiber that wanted to be activated at the time. You have to complete what didn't get completed in order to rewrite the code of your nervous system. So what I learned in the somatic experiencing therapy was two things. Children of womb trauma have one of three types of mothers. Either a mother with a mental disorder, which I had, a mother with some type of addiction, or a mother with an extreme hormonal imbalance. That's what makes that toxic womb. Oh. These soft spots that we have in our heads as babies get us through the birth canal. That's great. But they also allow our spirits to leave and commune back and forth to the other side. It's an act of mercy because it's a radical change to come to this material world. And it's interesting that those soft spots stay open for 2 years. It's to ease the transition. But what I learned was these womb babies like me, traumatic womb babies, leave more frequently to go back to the energy realm. And they become gifted spiritually or gifted analytically. Now, I don't have a lot of gifts, but I have both of those. And this was really empowering for me because I realized that if that experience was necessary for me to know, always know from the very beginning of my life that I was an energy being having a human experience, huh. It was well worth it. I wouldn't change a thing.
Did you, during this experience, did you remember the wound of the womb?
Yes. And under the sassafras, I felt every blow. My body literally hurled around the cot like I was in like a fight club.
Jeez.
I stored that energy for 50 years. I was 50 when I had that experience, 52. And our bodies will faithfully carry this dense, dark energy for us. But it is dis-ease. Dis-ease is the foundation of disease. You need to harmonize everything in here to have wellness. So it was, and it's interesting that that physical trauma was received exactly the same way as the psychological trauma I received later from my mother's new stephusband. Huh. As physical blows, all stored in my body as back kicks and gutter stomach punches. So it's quite remarkable when you allow that energy to move free.
Is your mom still alive?
She is not. And I tell you, Trish, that a lot of our healing happened after she dropped her body. I believe that when my mother dropped her body, she could express herself in the fullness of her true nature. So it's interesting that on my mother's deathbed, she stopped breathing for a long time, 3 or 5 minutes, and then took a gasp of air and said, "It's beautiful." Now, I wasn't there when my mother died, but my sister, who I'm not super close to because of her choice, I believe my mother pried that story from her lips because she wanted me to hear it. She wanted me to hear it. And I can picture my mother saying, "This is all great, and I got one more thing to do." She wanted to let us know that it's beautiful for all of us. So even though she had a mental illness and a lot of shortcomings, it's all love. And we're all subsumed back into love. And that was very powerful for me. It's so interesting. I don't know. I'm telling you things that I don't normally talk about, but for the sake of healing, my mother gave me a book of sonnets that Elizabeth Barrett Browning wrote to her husband, their love stories. My brother is an English literature major. She didn't give them to him. She gave them to me. And I know they were all her saying, this is how much I love you. So, and then I lost a family heirloom, a diamond ring that I promised my son to give his fiance. I lost it. And it wasn't even my family's ring. It was my husband's. And I said to my mother, listen, you need to find that ring. You found my sister's camera at the bottom of the ocean. You better find that ring. This is how I would talk to my mother. The ring was found. So many, many ways my mother has crossed realms to love me, show me how much I've always been loved, and heal me. And I'm very grateful. Yeah.
Now, are you the oldest?
No, I was the fourth child she had. A year apart. Bipolar with four children 1 year apart. That's a lot of stress, right?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Colleen, let's go from your mother to your husband. You said you've been married 46 years. How is he handling, or how did he handle all this, experience that you had? I mean, like almost half of your book focuses on this retreat you went on in Costa Rica, and the shaman you met and the people you met. And of course, with Finn, and your relationship with him, he must not be a very jealous person, willing to allow you to pursue your own life and your own pursuits within the marriage.
Well, that's a great question. He's not jealous, but I think it's much bigger than that. So he really believes in the autonomy and sovereignty of our own path. I really love that, because that is the actual true love. For us to control anybody else's path is not love at all. And so he is a big believer in all boats rise. You know, we're all becoming, do what you need to do to be the highest version of you. So when I had my second near death experience and I said, hey, I found out about this retreat on the other side of the world, that was a radical change in our marital contract, that in and of itself. And he's like, yeah, go. And I went with a guy friend of mine, and he was like, yes, you need that. Now, Rob, I will tell you, when I came back, for years, I would talk about these phenomenal experiences I would have. And he'd be like, that sounds so beautiful. And I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. And, you know, I love that he was willing to listen and hold that space. He's so sweet. And I knew that I couldn't change him, just like he couldn't change me. I didn't even try. So it was actually ideal, because after a few years, he said to me one day, you know, I see such changes in you. You're so happy. You have all these deep, meaningful relationships. He goes, I want that. But more important, I don't want to be left out of your life. I don't want to be left behind. So maybe I could go and learn about this breath work. And I'm like, really? Wow. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. And, you know, maybe I'll join, you know, your Ajahn Shanti group too. I'm like, wow, well, great. Now, I did not always realize that Finn was my twin flame. I never even heard that term. I saw in a vision first, I saw two horses with manes and tails of fire running through time together, kind of one ahead and then the other. And then we turned into Finn and me, and we bounced up each against each other and came apart. We're in space, in anti-gravity. And I saw this across all life, several lifetimes. And I'm like, well, that was interesting. And then 3 days later, I hear the terms wind flame, which is totally how spirit works, right? Drops these breadcrumbs. And I'm like, what's that? I look it up, and the lists that are tied to a great spiritual work together, they really resonated, you know, that there is no time. There's an instant knowing. You feel like home, on and on. And so I said to Finn, hey, here's this list. What do you think? And he took the list, and he's like, wow, that's how it feels for me, too. That's what he first said. And then I think his ego got involved, and he was like, oh, I don't want to derail your spiritual journey. What if it's not really a thing? So that was his journey. I'm like, you know, okay, well, it's alive. I get it. But I said to Spirit, you know, if I have this knowing, I need to be honorable and share it with my husband, but I'm not going to. I try really hard not to go head on with my own strength. So I'm like, Spirit, you give me the opening. Well, months up, I don't know, 6 weeks later, I was going to a workshop. My husband's like, oh, what's the workshop? Twin flames. Oh, what's that? Am I your twin flame? I said, oh, that it would be that easy. Now, Trish, I have a lot of friends, males and females. He immediately knew. He said, oh, it's Finn, right?
Wow.
I said, yeah. I said, yes. And he said, this is pretty amazing. And this is not just not being jealous. This is being secure in a relationship. He said, I am grateful that I have my rightful place in your heart. It's too big for one. And I'm so grateful that Feng can hold you in an emotional way that's hard for me.
Huh.
I mean, that's real love.
Yeah, so that's incredible.
I want to say a little bit about what in psychology we call object relations love. In object relations, it's comfortable. That our ego always comes up with the plan that's comfortable. So it's comfortable and complacent. I won't push these buttons for you if you make things easy for me and you don't ruffle my feathers. I know your quirks, you know mine, and we're just going to be very comfortable with each other. Now, the side effect of that is a lack of gratitude. We start to not appreciate the other one. When we treat the other person as a sacred vow and not an it, we live into the mystery. We go away, we have our own experiences, and then when we come back, it's like the double helix of DNA. You twirl around, you two fully whole strands twirling around each other to become a third greater thing. And that's what a sacred relationship is. And that requires a lot of safety and security. My husband realizes, as do I, that love begets love. So love multiplies love. When you are filled up with love, it's easy to flow it out everywhere and everybody benefits. And it's that frequency of energy. You're just raising each other up. It's a beautiful thing when you are willing to be out of your comfort zone.
Huh.
Now, all along, I've been honorable and he trusts that. And I will say that no one knows me more completely than Finn.
Huh.
And vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're in a tantric relationship with him, exploring Kundalini. You had a Kundalini awakening, and with the coiled snake coming up, rising up, Can you talk about that experience? I mean, usually when people refer to Tantra, there's usually sexual references involved, but you say this was outside of that, but yet it's a part of the sexuality of the person as well.
Yeah, and I want to say that the true core of Tantra is not overtly sexual. It's actually recommends to harness those energies and keep them in. It doesn't judge you if you act on it. It'll probably be beautiful, more like making love and that union than sex. And we've all experienced both sex versus making love. But when we choose not to act on it, then you are going to send that kundalini, which is the cerebral spinal fluid, up to the brain and release that DMT. So it is a path to that awakening. It gets harnessed by not acting on it. So we definitely explore that fully. And I had an experience. I mean, it sounds like it's okay to go to these places that might be taboo in other venues, but I had an experience of an energetic orgasm that lasted for 36 hours.
Damn.
It was like a body explosion of fireworks, and I was so awake in such a flow state, and it really was like making love to the universe. That's what it really was. Thing did happen to be sitting across from me, but it was like making love to the universe, and it was powerful. Huh. That's quite an awakening.
Yeah, you're right about that quite well. How did you go ahead, John?
There's some body voices, John, at the moment. But yeah, you know, and you know, at the end of the day, it hasn't quite worked out for me. But I do believe what. That's always been my thing, is that whoever your partner is, you spawn out. You both spawn out, go into the world, you're doing your own thing, and then you bring that stuff back in. And it is that, like, you know, it is that kind of like, I forget what Colleen was suggesting it as, is, you know, like a you know, DNA or whatever. But yeah, it is this spiral that you go out into the world, do your thing, and then you come back in. And that's what reinforces the relationship, I think, is because you go out in the world, you do your thing, and then come back in. And there, you know, where that connection is that you want to hear what each other has learned from the world. But anyways, all right.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Spot on.
Colleen, what I hate to ask this, but what astrology sign are you?
Taurus.
What's your husband?
Aquarius.
Oh, that's okay. That's an interesting combo. Yeah, Rob's a Taurus too.
Your birthday's coming up, unless you just had it. I don't know.
No, I'm a May 16th.
May 11th.
Okay. Yeah, how did you write this book? I mean, you have a lot of dialogue there. Did you keep notes, or did you just draw this material back into you? I mean, people have come to me that would you write my memoir for me? Well, reading your book, I could never write your memoir. I mean, you have to write it. That's what I tell people too. I mean, how would you write somebody else's memoir? I have no idea. So I don't think
the guy, Rob, who wanted fiction added to his memoir.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah. So it's very well written. But a lot of detail.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
So for 5 years, I kept journals. Because this was so new to me. And it is a love affair with the divine. You know, everything becomes a conversation with God when you're in a tantric relationship with the energy. Like emptying the dishwasher is a conversation with God. Everything is. Everything has energetic ramifications, and it makes everything sacred. So it was all new, and I would write these detailed lines into my journal. And after 5 years of so many bendings of reality, I mean, you know, to have butterflies make two circles around me and Finn, and then three days later, a different butterfly makes two circles around me and Joe. I'm like, all right, this is amazing. And I said, Spirit, like, these love gifts are really amazing, but are they just for me? Or usually your plans are multi-layered. And I got this resounding go inspire. And it's interesting because inspire and inspiration come from the same root word, which is breath. It's conscious breath. That's the gateway to presence, to inspiration, to that higher way of being. And I'm happy. What I did to answer your question, Rob, is I take this as a sacred mission. And so I always looked to get into my highest true nature, whether before writing. So whether it was breath work or meditation or micro dosing, I did my best to have the energy flow through me so that I wasn't writing from an ego place, because I believe that we're in a great awakening. That awakening is only going to happen from uncomfortable places. We only ever grow from uncomfortable places. And we need to be inspired to remember who we really are.
Is that what you like? Go ahead, Trish.
Okay, I'm just curious. How does the national news, international news, fit into your scheme? In other words, here we are in a war with another country, you know, that nobody knows why. So, I mean, how does all this fit into what you believe?
Well, there are two ancient cultures that I know of and astrology that all predicted this time in our human history. And it started at the winter solstice of 2019, right, when COVID was being born in China. We were all forced to go inward. I consider that the first labor pain. You know, we all got here through labor pains. It's those love squeezes that entered us into this realm. We only grow from an uncomfortable place, as I said. I think we're in the second labor pain now. Everyone I know feels it, feels the squeeze. The period is predicted to take about 50 to 55 years.
Oh, my God.
I'm happy to be alive for the love revolution. I didn't think I'd ever see it. But two things are predicted. One is that at the end of it, it'll be common knowledge that we're all connected. If not, that we're actually all one, but that we're all connected. The butterfly effect is real.
Right.
And two is that feminine energy, not necessarily women, but that compassion, that benevolence for the good of the whole will rule.
Oh, finally.
Now, knowing that, it's great because I get a preview to the end of the story. You know, it helps with trust because this is rigorous. But the patriarchy's not going to go down without a fight.
Mm-hmm.
These wars, this chaos, it's AI. We're seeing the grab to try to hold on. However, I'm going to say that there is no more powerful frequency in any realm in the cosmos than love. Love is almighty. I think that in the second labor pain for me personally and most of my tribe, what we're being asked is to trust in greater measure, independent of what is seen out here. That's what I'm feeling. Independent of what it looks like, trust. And, you know, I've been shown over and over, we're never alone. There is a plan. And holy evolution exists. The mind of God is evolving. I have had visions in breath work where I'm in that unity and there's such bliss that an amoeba gets sparked with life on some desolate planet somewhere. And we'd be foolish to think that we're the only species in the whole, you know, cosmos. And we're certainly not the most evolved. I mean, we can't bypass the time-space continuum.
Right.
It takes love, right, to create those higher abilities. So we're a relatively young species, but it's all evolving. Of evolution is part of life. We're always going to be changing and up-leveling. So I'm excited to be part of it.
Huh. And can I ask a question real quick? Because I'm just curious. So with everything you just said, so is the patriarchy male, or is it just a hierarchy? Is there an assigned behavior to it?
It's not male. It's masculine, oppression, aggression, those types of things. Money, power, aggression, control. Those are the energies of the patriarchy.
Yeah. So one of the things you talk about on the beginning of your journey, I think you used the word, you were searching for the anthropomorphic God, the God out there. And in the end of your journey, not that your journey is over, but as your journey evolved, you found God somewhere else. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a story. As you can tell, I'm a storyteller. When I was 27, my brother was 12, he was 15. He was 12 years younger than me. He was 15, and he was like a son to me. We talked every day, super, super close. I was like a second mother to him. One day we talked, and the next day he died in a car accident.
Oh, my God.
That was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with. And I was young. And so my view of God was very much, you know, anthropomorphic outside of me. And I prayed, you know, I did a lot of talking. This is how it should be. And I was like, you made a mistake. My mother had bipolar disorder. That should give us all a pass. She can't handle this. And this kid was 15. This should not have happened. I was so angry with God, I didn't talk for 3 years to God. So you can imagine how that went for me. My grief turned into complicated depression, and part of me died when my brother died, which is a shame because he loved to laugh. He loved life. He was one of the most selfless beings I ever knew. So after 3 years, I pulled into a church parking lot at night and I said, I'm so angry. All I can ask is that you take the hardness off my heart. That is all I could say. But those prayers, when we're at the very end of our strength, when we have nothing left, we're totally surrendered, they're the ones that are always answered. I've seen it for myself and everyone else. And it was a prodigal son kind of moment. Money fell into our laps. We got a house, which my brother always wanted for his two nephews. Huh. The story that I had wrapped around his dying changed, where I first felt God made a mistake. I saw how lucky am I to have had this relationship with this high love being like my brother, that most people didn't get to know. How lucky was I? So that's a commonality of how life shifts us into a more expansive view.
Do you feel him around?
Oh, I've had dreams of him nightly for probably 6 months, and he was always visiting from the other side. Always. He still comes in my dreams, and I still feel him. I'll tell you, Trish, I was so forlorn. I said, Eddie, if you're okay, send a cardinal and a blue jay.
Oh, that's great.
To the backyard. Swoop, swoop. Immediately. Immediately. So so many ways. I can call on him. He's always there.
See, with my you mentioning birds, when my sister died, I was sitting out on the porch of her house with our dog, and I look up and there's a hummingbird right in my face, so close I could see the color of its eyes. So I went running inside the house, told everybody, there's a hummingbird. That's Mary's archetype. And so she has one son who's a tattoo artist, and everybody got a hummingbird tattoo. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it was great. And birds do that.
For sure. And I want to say that Einstein correctly said, quantum physics supports it, that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So the Hindus have a different word for what happens when we come to the end of our lives. We call it death. They call it dropping your body. They meditate so much, they know the phenomenon. But back to your question, Rob. So that was my young experience of God. I carried that death energy with me for so long that years later, I had my first near-death experience as a car accident. I almost died. I was in the tunnel with the light, which when you're subsumed by love, I don't even have words to describe that. All I can say is that love talks in thoughts, and love said, we want you to go back, but it's your choice. So when love asks you to do something, you're like, of course, like, why would I pick any other? Of course I'll go back. But in coming back, there was an empowerment for me because I knew I was choosing it. I had been living with one foot in the grave after my brother died, but now I was in with 2 feet. I was choosing. And the reality is every day we wake up, we have chosen, so we should embody that. However, I still felt God was outside of me. So this love never gives up knocking on our hearts. Years later, I got pneumonia that lasted 10 months. I'm bleeding from my lungs. I'm gasping to find any air. Almost died. And when they told me, they said, you don't have any autoimmune disease. You will get well. I took stock in my life. I'm like, you know, I've helped a lot of people, but who have I really bonded with? Who have I connected with? Who have I created a love legacy with? And I realized I fell woefully short. And I fell to the floor sobbing. I'm like, I'm on gifted time now. Please just make me be loved in every moment. Again, that is a prayer at the end of my strength. Within 2 weeks, I found out, I had found out about the retreat. And within 2 weeks, I went to Costa Rica and I learned breath work. So it's an ironic poetry that life, this great playwright, has me gasping for air to find a devotion to breath, which... changed my life, and I realized that God really is the energy that runs through everything, animate and inanimate. We know from quantum physics that every cell is 99.999% space, whether it's in a desk, it's in our human bodies, it's in a tree, it doesn't matter. And what's in that cell is a magnetic field that whirls around those nanoparticles. That magnetism is intelligent. It whirls them in an orderly way. That intelligence is God. That's the loving supreme intelligence that runs through everything. That's what we call essence. That is what the Christians call the Holy Spirit that runs through everything. In Hindu, they call it essence. That is God. So that's what I learned, that, and that's what I'm in love with, and that's what makes every moment an essence merging moment.
How old were you when you had the second?
I was 52 or 58. I was in my 50s.
Okay, I'm just curious. Interesting.
Yeah, that car accident you had, I mean, you were stuck in that car for like hours, weren't you, that they couldn't get you out of there?
Hours in the pelting rain. And a nurse climbed in, an off-duty nurse climbed into the wreckage among the glass to be behind me and hold my hand. And they're like having, they try to pry the car apart. And I realized they were tearing my leg. The emergency brake was impaled in my leg. I'm like, and I'm in shock. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm hemorrhaging back here. And they snap it back together. And another 45 minutes, they're discussing. I'm like, I'm all good with the discussion. But ooh, let's just make a decision here.
Not really. You had lots of broken bones, but you were in a space where you were ready to go, and maybe that would be it. But so it was like a calm space. It seemed the way you described it,
and very very calm and peaceful. Now my blood pressure when I came back was 60/30, so that was that was an adaptive grace, and at a cost that, I talk about what I had to go through to get that trauma out of my body. It's a big deal. There's a lot of blessings and there's a lot of challenges in it, but I wouldn't change it for sure.
Oh, okay. I'd like to talk a little bit more with you about breath work.
Rob's a former yoga teacher, so.
Yeah, I got involved with the first style of yoga was Shivananda, and we always started with about 20 minutes of breathing exercises, various types of breathing exercises. And after that, I moved into different styles of yoga, but only the breath work never came up again, really, to any degree as with Shivananda. And I'm wondering if what types of breathing that styles of breathing that you prefer? Are there any types that you find that work best for you?
I'm so glad you asked. So many I don't prefer because they're very fast paced. They make me dizzy. I can't do that. And my body naturally wants to revert to a slower pace. I do what we call circular integrative breathing. It's very slow paced. So physiologically, it does a few things. It activates your parasympathetic nervous system. It activates a delta brain wave pattern, which is restorative, slow healing. And as you get slower and slower with it, and your exhale is always going to be slower than the inhale because you're just letting it fall out. It's in through the nose, out through the nose. But it's a full breath in. So most people only ever use about half their lung capacity. You're manipulating energy from the base of your spine up, 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 all the way up to that pineal gland. So it is a full breath till you cannot take in any more air. Then you're letting it fall out. As you lose yourself in the act, your subtle body will loosen from your physical form. And that's when it's either going to flow in the cosmos or it's going to hover over you and you might have one of those descent trips that I talked about. Either way, you're in the eyes of love. And so when your subtle body has released from your physical form, you're actually in a gamma brainwave pattern. Now, what's interesting about that is most of what we know from functional MRIs that the brain has what is called a default mode network. It's a very well-ruled pattern in our frontal cortex, and it's almost like 9 different connections. And it maps onto Freud's construct of the ego. It's amazing that he came up with this construct. Now we have proof of it. So it's very self-referential. It looks for the shortcuts. It keeps us sleepwalking through life. Well, that quiets down, and when you're in gamma, on a PET scan, the whole brain is lit up. Cross communication all over the place. And it's where we have the ability to pluck out of the quantum field any potential outcome. It's the highest manifesting power. This is all happening because of the slower breathwork pattern.
Interesting.
How do you distinguish between breathwork and meditation? Is it the same for you?
Completely different. So meditation is a radical dropping in of presence. It's rigorous. It's the easiest to integrate. However, if you have a diatribe going on in your brain, it'll be the longest 5 minutes of your life. I tell my clients, save that for when you're further down in the journey and you have some peace and stillness out there. Breathwork meets you where you are. And then, of course, the easiest to get into your soul is psychedelics, but it's the hardest to integrate.
Do you teach online courses, Colleen?
I don't. I've used to see clients until about a year ago. I've devoted myself to this book, and we'll see what goes. And I don't want to, I don't like to judge anybody. I've taken a lot of online courses. I've benefited from them greatly. I think that for me personally, there's, and I really believe in a sacred economy, but I don't want to monetize this because I feel like it's a gift. I just want to really inspire. I'm so grateful that love picked me. I'm just grateful to be called. And so I want to inspire. And I don't know what's next. We all live in the mystery. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, we're coming to the end of our hour here. Thank you very much,
Colleen. Yeah, tell people about where they can find you and your book and all that stuff. Your website.
Thank you. Yeah. So my website is essencemerging.com, and I'll send you links that you maybe can put underneath the show notes. I do offer a free download for 9 simple steps to awakening there. I'm on Instagram. My book's available everywhere, but I have a link on Amazon, and I am on YouTube. I have several breathwork videos, but I have a simple 5-minute one that's pretty much the step-by-step of how to do circular integrative breathing. So I'll make sure you get that link as well. I think that's everything.
Oh, this is great. Well thank you. You've been fascinating to talk with.
Yeah. And we've been way out, especially at the end of this podcast, we've been way out in the deep end of the pool. So I got to make a pop culture reference to get us back in the shallow end as we end this. But so Colleen Quinn.
Colleen Quinn.
Yes. So how often do you get confused with Colleen Quinn? Do you know who I'm talking about? Yeah, he's a comedian from back in the day. But yeah, Colleen Quinn, he was on like Saturday Night Live and stuff. But at any rate, Colleen versus Colleen. Colleen versus Colleen Quinn.
It's funny because I'll tell you what I get all the time. Dr. Quinn, medicine woman.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that'll do it.
Thanks for joining the Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com. for the latest blog posts and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. Send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening and stay mystical.